Okay, so we are learning about Pesach. We're starting in the Haggadah. We're going to be learning like inside the Haggadah. Hi, Bacheva. Hi.
Are you talking about me?
I was Bush Bash. Nice plant behind you. Very, very nice plant. It's a cactus or something. So we're going to be learning in the Haggadah. So we are, of course, I got a few other Sfarim. I have like a stack of Sfarim behind my computer that you can't see. And I was reading them and I was doing notes on them and whatever. And I'm like, I have to teach Rav Lichter. Like, I just have to teach Rav Lichter. Like, you know, I just have to teach Rav Lichter. So I'm going to be teaching you Rav Lichter from Rav Lichter's Megillah. I mean, not Megillah, Haggadah, which I recommend you getting. It's called Pesach Haggadah, Living Our History by Rav Reuven Lichter. And the one thing that I want you, that really changed my perspective that I learned from Rav Lichter, which is why it isn't really compelling for me to teach anything else, is that his basic mahalach, which we have to remember at all times, is that what the Haggadah isn't is exactly what like all of our childhoods sometimes, just because that's what happened, made the Haggadah into. Like, I remember sitting with my grandparents. My grandparents lived in Chicago, and I was there with like 16 of my cousins, or there's 16 of us cousins, and everyone came with like their binders of Haggadahs from school. Right? And everybody would like stop at Dayenu and like tell a vort, you know? And then the other person had like a vort on like the Arba Banim, so they would stop there and tell a vort, right? So it was a bunch of like vorts, and some people would tell the really long-winded and everyone would fall asleep or like tell them to stop, right? Like, we all have these dynamics. Maybe it's just me, but I think we all have these dynamics at our Seder. And his mahalach is that that's exactly what it isn't. It isn't delving really deeply into like different pieces of it. Like, if you're learning Parsa Shmos, you know, you could learn like, that's how I learned Sefer Devarim, which I love so very, very, very much, right? It's, we went through it mostly pshat, and in certain places we delved really deep. And his point is like, that is totally not the mahalach of the Haggadah. The mahalach of the Haggadah is that it's called the Haggadah. It's telling you a story. And instead of delving really deep in different places here and there, you need to read it as a story and understand like the message and the story of a story. And as long as you're seeing it as different pieces here and there, you're not going to get what it's trying to tell you. In the same way that a good story, and it's not a story stump, it's a story about ourselves, right? It's a personal story about us, and that has meaning for us year after year after year. And unless we're reading it as a story, we're not going to get it. We're not going to get what the Haggadah is trying to teach us. So that's always his mahalach. And again, if you're gonna remember one thing, the different pieces of it and how they weave together as a story is not as important as that hashkafa, right? The hashkafa that every year when we go into the Haggadah, it's a Haggadah. It's telling us something. Interestingly, I had actually a really bad experience today that totally relates to this, but and you should also know that every time I have a bad experience, the only redeeming quality is I'm like, at some point I'm going to use this as an example or as a story in Chabura, and then it's going to make me feel better about these 2 hours of my life. So I had that experience today. I'm sure I'll mention it again later, but I attended one of Simon Sinek's workshops. Does anyone know who Simon Sinek is? He gives one of like the top 25 TED Talks of all time, with like whatever 25 million people or more had seen it. It's called Start With Why. You probably recognize it. No, it's like everyone knows what they do and some people know how they do it, but few of us know why we do it. And his whole mahalach is like every leader and every person should really start with why. Like, talk about why you do what you do before you talk about what and how you do it. Fine. So it was the whole like workshop on Start With Why. But the whole mahalach of the workshop, which was actually like fascinating for me, is that it's centered around stories. Like, you were paired with somebody, and I had a really bad partner, and that's why it was like annoying, but it wasn't their fault, right? But the mahalach was fascinating. It was that you told stories about your life, and you listened to the other person's stories, and you sort of found the themes and the things that drove them in their stories. But even that was story-centric. That insight, the basic insight of the start with why are we doing what we're doing? Why are we here in this earth? Starts with the stories that we tell about ourselves and our lives. So that's the Haggadah. It's the story of our lives as a Jewish people. And again, I really want to do that workshop with you guys at some point because it's really awesome. And it would also make me feel like I was vindicated from the 2 hours that I wasted with this random lady who, by the way, guys, she was Egyptian. Is that weird? I was like, I was like uncanny. I was like, the other thing that I have behind my computer right now is like my Chabura about like Egypt trying to kill us. And now I have this Egyptian woman who I'm like coaching, and I don't want to be coaching her, and she's doing a bad job coaching me. And it was just like the whole thing was weird. Fine. Story for a different time. So let's go. Let's start with Magid. Again, the Magid, right? Again, here's that Lashon. Here's that Shoresh, right? Magid, to tell over. Hello, F. I'm not sure who you are, F, but welcome. Hi, Shira, and hi, Rachel, who I haven't said hello to yet. And hi, Yael. I don't think I said hello to you either. Welcome, everybody. Okay, so let's go. Magid. Ready? Halach ma'anya. Okay, we start with talking about the matzah, right? We hold up the matzah, or at least we talk about the matzah. Halach ma'anya diachlu avasana ba'ara dimitzrayim. Here's the matzah, the bread of affliction that we ate in Egypt. So here's a question. Again, this is the basic question you're going to see all the time. Is the matzah a bread? Is matzah a symbol? Matzah is a symbol, obviously, right? Maror, matzah, those things are symbols. Is matzah a symbol, a positive symbol, or a negative symbol? According to this, what is it? What? Would you just say?
Negative.
Negative. Good. Why are you saying that, Bacheva?
It's the bread of the affliction.
Okay, good. You're like, it's really hard to use the word affliction and have it be a positive thing. Oh, hi, Bacheva. That's who Heather is. Or that's who F is. Sorry. Hi, Heather F. Okay, good. So who disagrees with Bacheva and why? This is like the big debate about matzah.
Don't we also say that it's relates to freedom, though?
Good. Where do we say that and why do we say that? In what context? Good. Shira?
Well, it's part of the freedom process. It's a big part of it. So it, like, that's what it relates to versus like affliction because we were slaves, but now we're like out of it. So we're using the matzah when we're out of it.
Very good. So Shira doesn't know that she's quoting later in the Haggadah. She probably does know somewhere subconsciously, right? But she's actually quoting up a paragraph that comes way later in Magid that symbolizes, that uses the matzah as a symbol for something totally else. Where it says, matzah zosha anu achlim al shuma. Why are we eating this matzah? This is a very direct symbolism. Why are we eating the matzah? And it doesn't say this is the bread of affliction. This is what our forefathers ate in Mitzrayim because they were very poor and they only had a little bit of fuel. And this was the only kind of bread that they could use with their ovens with only a little bit of, like, you know, wood to burn and fire. Like, that's not what they talk about. Right, and it was very harsh and blah blah blah. That's what they say. Al shum shalu hispik betzikam shalavosenu lahachmitz al shen ad shenigla aleihem melech malchei hamlochim hakadosh baruch hu ugeulam. They didn't have time. The geula came so fast and so swift and so powerful that their bread didn't have time to rise. Right, it's a symbol of how fast Hashem and how like direct and strong Hashem's intervention into their lives were. That's a very positive symbol of matzah. Right here, where we start, it's a very negative symbol of matzah. And what is matzah? Both. I hate answers that say both, by the way. I almost never give answers that are both. But here, that's the point, right? The point is the complexity. It's the complexity of the story. We start out with a symbolism that's negative, which is the same symbolism later that's positive, right? But the point is our relationship to this whole process is personal and it's complex. The matzah is symbolic of slavery, but it's also symbolic of redemption. It's symbolic of both of them. And every time we talk about this story, it's not the whole story where, like, we're shoving away the slavery part of the story to get to the redemption. And it's not that we're shoving away the redemption part because we're so focused on the slavery, right? It's really both. Every time we talk about slavery, we know that it's going towards redemption. And every time we talk about redemption, we know that it's coming from slavery, right? Our relationship with this is very deep and personal and complex and wholesome, right? There's a lot happening here, and just that's like the opening line of Magid, right? Is this complex relationship that we have with the story that's about to start. Okay, and then we say, kol dichvin yesei v'yechol, kol ditzrich yesei v'yichsap, right? We invite everybody, which is a little bit weird. I mean, we could invite everyone on Hanukkah too, and we could invite everyone on Purim too, and we could invite everyone, like, we could, but we, like, don't really. So why is that part of the Haggadah here? Why do we have to do that? What does it relate to the story? Like, what does that teach us about the story that we're saying in front of us?
I mean, I at least read this. I don't know if it's what you're saying, but it's like a symbol of our freedom. I read that you're like, now we're free to have guests. We're not slaves where we don't like to think about our survival. We can have other people too and think about others.
Wow. I love that. Exactly. So that's awesome. That's not what Rav Lichter says. But again, like that is part of the story, right? That's part of the story of our freedom. So again, those kinds of things are just as legitimate, so to speak, in terms of hearing the story and following the story through. So I love that. He says that, like, you know, the story is the redemption of the Jewish people and of our part as the Jewish people. So in this holiday, more than any other holidays, we welcome in every other Jew. Instead of looking at the differences that we have between people, of like, well, I'm sophisticated, they're not sophisticated, I'm educated, they're not educated, I'm this and I'm that, and I have this hashkafa, they have that hashkafa, right? Instead, this is a theme that you see also throughout the Magid. It's inclusive. We are part of the Jewish people, and that's a value that we have because that's why we were redeemed. Okay, then we go into the Manishtana, right, where we have the four famous questions. Manishtana halal hazeh mikol leilos, right? And so this is like one of my leading questions and I'm not going to be able to get you guys to say what I want to say. So, right, like the principle driving the Manishtana is curiosity, right? Manishtana, we're asking questions, but it's not just like a, you know, okay, we have to ask questions, right? It's that when we start this process of the Haggadah, when we start the process of telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have to approach it, every individual, with a sense of curiosity. right? And curiosity, every single year, again and again, we approach UTS Mitzrayim and we say, what does UTS Mitzrayim say to me? What's the message here for me? What is it trying to tell me about my Avodas Hashem? Again, as part of a klal, not just like individualistic, right? As part of a klal, but as an individual, as part of a klal. That's always the question that we ask ourselves. What is Pesach trying to tell me? And the fascinating thing, which I never really thought about before, again, in all the readings that I was doing in preparation of this, we call it the Seder, right? We call the Seder, the order. It's the only thing in Judaism besides for the Seder, I think, that we call the order, right? The order of things. But it's very weird because actually the Seder is the one night that we deviate from the order that we usually do things. And that's what the Manishtana is about, right? The Manishtana is like, why is this night different? But this night is called the order. But the order of this night is very different than the order of any other nights. Again, we have these vegetables, and we have the vegetables before we eat, before we wash, we have these vegetables that we're dipping, and right, like we wash, and then we don't actually eat bread, we just wash without a bracha, and then we don't eat bread, and then we wash again with a bracha, and then we do eat bread, right? The Seder of the order of the Seder is very different than the Seder of the order of the rest of the year. And that's what the Manishtana is asking us. It's asking us basically, like, what's the Seder of this night is deviant from the Seder. To teach us, again, this night is supposed to be especially meaningful for us. It changes the way that we usually do things because the night is supposed to change the way that we do things. It's supposed to change us. It's supposed to change our Avodas Hashem. That's always the goal of every Seder night. And we approach it with curiosity. We approach it with the curiosity of, what can I learn tonight about my Avodas Hashem in the Seder that's different than usual Seders so that my life will be different than the usual Seder that it was before now when I walk out of this night? Again, so very focused on that. Again. Okay, Avadim Hayinu L'Parvim Mitzrayim, right? We were slaves to Parvim Mitzrayim. Now we're starting to tell the story. There's a whole machlokas, like, is this the start of the story? Is later the start of the story, right? But according to at least some, Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves to Parvim Mitzrayim. Okay, V'yotzi'inu Hashem Elokeinu Misham B'yad Chazaka B'Zrayim. Two, it's kind of like, you know, the topic sentence, so to speak. Like, here's the without going into the details, which happens later in Magid. Like, here's what happened. We were slaves and Hashem redeems us. And had Hashem not redeemed us, we would still be slaves to Parma Mitzrayim. So again, you know, Rav Lichter takes this, and I always forget because I read a great other pshat that I want to share. So I have to like actually look at my notes at this point. Right, Rav Lichter shares that like okay, I'm skipping the first part. Rav Lichter says, like, what does it mean that we would have still been slaves to Parma Mitzrayim? Like, come on, right? Like, that's always the question. Like, we would have still been slaves. And his point is that this Seder is teaching us about Hashem, again, what he says, like, extending his arm into history and plucking out the Jewish people. And that's the point of history, too. So it's true. It's weird for us. We're like, oh, come on, the Jews wouldn't still be slaves. Like, Egyptians don't even have slaves. Like, you know, this lady who I spoke to, she didn't have any slaves. She had a sheep, but she didn't have slaves. You know, so, like, what does it mean we would have still been slaves? And his point is like, no, it's true. History would have completely stagnated. Without the birth of the Jewish people, which is the point of history from Hashem's perspective, without the birth of the Jewish people, history would have gone nowhere. It would have just completely stagnated. It wouldn't have developed in a different way. It would have not developed at all. It would have just totally stagnated. Because the point of the history, bichlal, all of history, is the birth of the Jewish people. And the point of Jewish history specifically is the birth of the Jewish people. So had none of those things happened, it would have just flatlined. I heard a great other pshat this year that focuses on the word meshubad. What does the word meshubad mean in contemporary Hebrew? Oh, he's meshubadla. He's meshubad to him. Right? What does it mean if you say somebody's meshubad to somebody else? What'd you say?
Submissive.
Okay, good. But what, like... What'd you say?
I'm just guessing things out now.
Yeah, so meshubit, right. You would say, right, it is kind of like that connotation to say, like, he's meshubit to the claw, he's meshubit to what that other person started, like, beholden to somebody, right? But it could also mean, like, you owe that person somebody, that something, right? Meshubit, you're meshubit to him. You owe him something, and that's why you're compelled to XYZ. So the pshat is that, like, you know, it's true. Something might have happened if Hashem hadn't rescued the Jewish people. What would have happened to the Jewish people as this like nation of slaves? Either eventually, again, you know, like America, so to speak, you would have had somebody who would have released them from captivity. Some power would have come along and released them from captivity, or some neighboring country would have come and taken over Egypt and released them from captivity. You know, or possibly they would have themselves coup d'etat and taken over the powership, so to speak, right? But either way, the Jewish people for the rest of their lives would owe themselves as a nation to somebody else. They would have been meshubed They would have been meshubit to the new paro for releasing them. They would have been meshubit to the person who took over for letting them free. They would have been meshubit to somebody. And the point here is like, no, meshubadim hayinu leparo b'mitzrayim. Like, we would have all, had Hashem not released us, we would have been meshubit to somebody for our freedom, even if we would have been freed at some point. And here, the point is like, we're only meshubit to Hashem. We're not meshubit to anybody else. We don't owe anything to anyone. No human person. We Jewish people, the Jewish nation, owes nothing to anybody except for Hashem. And any other way that history would have gone, we would have been meshubit to somebody. And had to like have paid them back also justice. And here it's only Hashem. So I thought that was like a great shot with the words. Okay. Again, this is really the theme. This is like, if you had, again, only one paragraph that you were able to read of Magid, this is the one that I would choose. Again, that's me. It's not like Rebbe Lechter actually says that, but, right, even if we were all intelligent, if we all knew everything, if we were all elders, right, if we were like literally like the giants of Torah who are teaching Torah to everybody else, we all have exactly the same mitzvah, l'saper b'yitzias Mitzrayim, to tell of the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim. V'chol amar b'l'saper b'yitzias Mitzrayim, harei zeh meshubach. And whoever tells the story, telling the story is the mitzvah of the night. Right, Rav Leuchter talks about this, I forgot to say this earlier. Rav Leuchter talks about this mushal. It was in some other shir somewhere and it like blew my mind. But he talks about, like, there's so many mitzvos that we know everybody has a mitzvah, right? Everyone on this call, there's 10 of us on this call, and everybody has exactly the same mitzvah, l'saper b'yitzias Mitzrayim. Right? It's the same mitzvah. So it's the same thing for everybody. So he's like, those mitzvos on that level are gray. Right? It's gray across the board. We all have the same mitzvah. But where we find connection to the mitzvah and how it resonates with us and how we bring that out into our personal lives, that's where there's color. And we're all obligated to have very colorful lives. So here's true, right? We every single one of us, no matter who we are, have the same gray mitzvah to be l'saper yetzias Mitzrayim. But every single one of us in every single year are required to show up with a certain sense of curiosity and a certain sense of personal investment. What does this story mean to me now? What does this story mean to me this year? What am I hearing this year, right? We're going to see that lesson later, right? Can I get Arba Banim Dibra Torah? The Torah is speaking to people. It's speaking to us. What are we hearing this year? And that's where we have the color in our lives, and that's what we're obligated. We're obligated to have colorful lives. Okay, Masa Barabi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua. I also heard a great shot here that I'm going to share. Right, heard meaning read. Masa Barabi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, Jehayu Mesubim Bnei Brak. Right, they were all having a seder in Bnei Brak. Vahayu Mesapim Bisayis Mitzrayim Koloso Alayla Achabu Tamidim Vahamru Lahem, until their Tamidim came and said to the Ham Rabbi Seinu, Higiyaz Man Kriyas Mashal Shacharis. It's Shacharis time. So again, this is the indication, right? This is like the illustrative story example of the previous principle, right? These people were the greatest Torah sages. They are the greatest Torah sages, even now. Sorry. And still they spent the whole night telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. All right, that's what they did. They spent the whole night telling the story and getting enmeshed in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So I heard this year something that really, like, it really, I never thought of it before. Who are these five rabbis? They were like they're a very, very famous cohort of rabbis. Who remembers from Pirkei Avos what we learned about them? I mean, there's tons of stories, right? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, they're the one with the Tanur, Shalachnai, and the whole argument that they had, and the Bas Kol came down from Shemayim, right? They're also the same, so again, it's a very famous pair. I mean, Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer are a very famous pair, and then everyone else is also very famous, obviously. These are the same ones. You know the famous story of Rabbi Akiva who walked past the ruins of Beis HaMikdash? Right, and they all cried and he laughed. This is crew, so to speak. Right, that's this group of rabbis, with Rabbi Akiva included. So they lived the generation right after the Churban, right? Again, Rabbi Akiva himself, I think Rabbi Yeshua also, were killed as one of the Sarah Hegri Gemalchus. Right, so they lived in not a very happy time, to put it mildly. Right, they lived right after the Churban, to the extent that they could walk past the Churban and see the Churban with like the smoke rising and the foxes running back and forth. Right? And they're the ones who were so enmeshed in the story of redemption. And what I also heard, which I thought was very fascinating, is that the eldest person here, meaning the senior rabbi here, is actually Rabbi Tarfon. And the junior rabbi here is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was actually like half a generation younger than the rest of them. But they were in Bnei Brak, which is Rabbi Akiva's hometown, and not in Lod, which is Rabbi Tarfon's hometown. So usually, again, you would think that the junior person and everybody would go to the senior rabbi's house. But here it seems everybody went to Rabbi Akiva's house. Because they knew that of all of them, who was the most, like, really enmeshed in his personality, in Geula, in redemption, in believing in that? Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is always the tragic optimist that we see. There's like Rabbi Jeff was speaking about. Rabbi Gershenfeld has like a few shirim about like there's a few times in the Gemara that it talks about everybody else cried and Rabbi Akiva laughed. Everyone else cried and Rabbi Akiva laughed. Which like again, I would love to hear a share about that. Like of just his personality, and he wasn't like, you know, faking. He just saw the world in a different way that was so much more positive and so much more believed in ultimate, you know, geula and ultimate optimism. And that's what's happening here too. And they go to his house. And that's where they spend the whole night talking about the redemption, about Yetzias Mitzrayim. So that just like gave right another layer to it. That's just like so, so beautiful. Okay. Then Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Harei ani kiban shivim shana, right? Lo zechiti shemar Yetzias Mitzrayim b'leilo. So this is like one of the most more complicated, I think, paragraphs where like we're not exactly sure what's happening and where's the story in here? What's the story telling us? Right? And he says, I didn't understand that Yetzias Mitzrayim. Everyone knows that you have to tell Yetzias Mitzrayim in the daytime, right? By the way, like, let's take a step back. Yetzias Mitzrayim is something that we mention on a daily basis, right? It is very practically part of our daily Avodas Hashem, that we always are talking about it. We're always going back to it. So he's saying, like, I understand why, like, again, symbolically, daytime is a time when we were talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim. When we're feeling connection to Hashem, when we're seeing Hashem in our lives, that's when Yetzias Mitzrayim is like a center point of our Avodas Hashem. But what about the nights? I didn't get that it was the nights. It was even in those difficult times when I don't see Hashem that I still feel connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? And that's the point here. Like, yes, even in those nights, you feel connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim. When things are not going well, we still understand that Yetzias Mitzrayim is a pinpoint of our avoda, that we understand that Hashem is with us in those times. And even in Mashiach times, right? You'd think that in Mashiach, Yetzias Mitzrayim would not be part of our avoda Hashem in the times of Mashiach. And it's like, no, this is what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying here. No, you know what? It's also Lahaviv Yimas Mashiach, right? It also includes the times of Mashiach, where Yetzias Mitzrayim is still part of our national identity of Avodas Hashem, because that was like the foundation. That was the foundation of the nation. And no matter where we go in terms of ultimate Geula, we always need to be hearkening back to this story whence we were formed as a nation. Okay, and then we say Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenasan Torah La'am Yisrael, Baruch Hu. We bring the Torah in again. Why? Very like pshat, I guess. I mean, why? And then Arabanim, and then we're done for tonight. Why do we suddenly switch to talk about the Torah? What are we orienting ourselves to understand?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. As we're talking again, as the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we like throw in right now, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenasan Torah La'am Yisrael, Baruch Hu. Like, we basically bless Hashem for giving us the Torah. Why are we doing that in the middle of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim? And again, we're going to go back to it, back and forth. Yeah, Bacheva?
Yeah, I imagine, like, the whole, like, it's the end goal. And, like, putting it in every now and then, just remember where we're going, where we're headed to.
Exactly. Exactly. No, exactly, right? Which, again, is a little bit different than the stories of slavery. Meaning, to us, it's like, pshat, right? It's like, of course we have to talk about the Torah. Of course it's where we're going, right? Which is true. And Chasdei Hashem, that's what we all think and feel about our lives, right? But, you know, if you listen to other stories of slavery and redemption, they don't always go somewhere. Right? The redemption itself from slavery is an end in and of itself. Freedom from slavery is an end in and of itself. Anything that secularizes the Torah gets stuck on that point, right? They're going to put that part in parentheses or just erase it from the Haggadah completely. Whatever. Torah, you know? It wasn't for the Torah. It was like redemption from slavery itself was great. It was great. But it was great for the sake of getting to Torah. That was the point of Yetzias Mitzrayim for us, right? One of the points and one of the points of our national identity. And that's, again, the Torah is where us as a people and us as individuals, that's where our Avodas Hashem is focused on. That is what focuses our Avodas Hashem. Once we were created from Yetzias Mitzrayim to have Avodas Hashem, the Torah is what guides our Avodas Hashem and informs it every day. Okay, then, Arba Banim. Can I get Arba Banim Dibra Torah? The Torah, I love this. I never also realized this lesson before. Dibra Torah. I don't know if we have that anywhere else. Like, the Torah speaks to us. The Torah speaks to us. And again, Rav Lichter doesn't see the four sons as like a rank system of like who's better than who. His like point is that like the Arba Banim are different personality types, right? It's sort of like the predecessor of the Enneagram. We're not talking about like who's better and who's worse. We're talking about different ways that different Jews approach themselves, the world around them, and Avodas Hashem. And everyone has something to learn. So the Torah Dibra Torah, the Torah speaks to all kinds of Jews. And now we talk about the few kinds of Jews that the Torah speaks to, the different kinds of Jews that the Torah speaks to, and how Yetzias Mitzrayim is meaningful to them. Okay? Chacha, mahu omer, ma yidus v'chukim ha-mishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu eschem, v'af ata emor lo kehilchos ha-pechasach, ein maftirin achar pesach ha-bikomen, right? So the Chacham comes out with an intellectual question, right, that is very detail-oriented. but not because he's an intellectual who's like trying to like approach this with intellectual curiosity. He's very practical. He's trying to say like he's very intelligent. He's asking about the details. He notices the details. He assumes significance of the details. And then he says to himself, and what does that mean for me? What am I supposed to take from that into my Avodas Hashem? Like, you know, what does this mean? What does it mean for me? And then you give him a very detailed answer that shows him, again, a very practical piece, practically following it through to the Afikoman. Right? So again, he's intelligent. He assumes meaning of the details, and he's looking for guidance in his practical life and his practical Avodas Hashem. Rasha mahu amer, mahavodah zos lachem. Lachem velo lo, ulefi shahutzi es atzmo min haklal kafar v'ikar. Vavata hake es shinovem, mor lo bavor zes Hashem libim tisim min Yisrayim, li velo lo, ilu hayasham, lo hayanigal. So again, Rav Lech doesn't see this as like, you know, musser, you're gonna get musser, and you're like slapping him on the, right? He doesn't really see that. He says like, this is where this person needs to be educated. The chacham, he knows the details, he understands the details, and you give him the details, because that's what he wants. He wants to understand the practical details of the Pesach, right? The Rasha, what's his epic mistake? He really only makes one mistake. He doesn't talk about that vigorous that he does. He doesn't talk about, like, you know, him throwing everything out the window. It could be that he's somebody who does all the mitzvos and he's right there. He's at the Seder, right? He's doing the mitzvos of the Seder. We have no reason to assume otherwise. What's his one mistake that we see that Russia is making?
That it doesn't apply to him?
Yeah, that it doesn't, that the klal doesn't apply to him, right? It's his misconception of his role within the klal. Right, it's not really his misconception, let's say, of his role in terms of Avodas Hashem. It's misconception of his role in terms of the klal. Right, I have my Avodas Hashem, you have your Avodas Hashem. What does Hashem do for you? What does Hashem do for me? Right, and it's like the separation between him and klal Yisrael. And so, like again, according to Rav Lechter, like that's his error, that he sees himself as very different from the klal, and like he's better than some people, he's maybe worse than some other people. These people are like me because they have the same hashkafa, and they have the same education, and the same sophistication, and these people are unlike me. And it's like, no, that's not what Hashem did. Hashem didn't rank order Bnei Yisrael, and like, you know, the top two-thirds were redeemed. Hashem redeemed klal Yisrael, and people who related to themselves as part of klal Yisrael. So in Pesach, of course we're individuals, and it's important for us to be individuals, but we're individuals within klal Yisrael. And only with that perception and that understanding of ourselves as individuals within Klal Yisrael, that's how we're redeemed. Tam mahu omer, mazos, right? He's simple, he's simplistic, he doesn't understand the details, either because he doesn't really understand them or because he doesn't understand that they're significant. So he asks a very general question, and you give him the headlines. You give him the headlines of what happened, and again, the assumption that he can't necessarily really understand more. Right? Hashem extended himself into history and redeemed us, and now we are again meshubad lo, and not to anybody else. She'eno yodei lishol at pesach lo. One who doesn't know how to ask, you open up for him. She'namar v'gatz leben chabayam ahule mor ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li b'seisim Mitzrayim. Right, you say to him, because of this, Hashem did when I left Mitzrayim. So this, I think, is like the biggest chiddush of Rav Lechter on the Arba Banim, which is that, like, what's the she'eno yodei lishol's error? He also makes an error. If you look in little books, I mean, I think we've spoken about this before, but if you look in books, sometimes they illustrate him as like a baby, or he doesn't yet know how to ask, as if like he doesn't yet know how to ask, as opposed to what? It's a little bit more of a cynical way you could view this personality.
Never know how?
Yeah, he never knows how, meaning what?
It's like neurologically, like,
No, yeah, so he reads it, Rav Lechter reads it much less of like, you know, it's outside of his own control. And more of like, you know, this guy's also at the Seder. And maybe he's also doing Avodas Hashem. But his one error is that he never asks. Because you know what? Like, this is a historical commemoration. I've done this before. I get it. The Matzah and the Maror symbolize what happened all the way back then. They symbolize Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim didn't change. It's a historical event. So I understood Yetzias Mitzrayim last year. I understand it this year. Like, what's the big deal? He has nothing more to ask. Right? It's the opposite of the character trait of curiosity that showed up in the Manishtana. This person, he might be there, he might be doing everything, but he has nothing to ask. What does he have to ask? What does he have to learn? Right? And this is really like totally the opposite of what we're going for on the Seder night. And you tell him, again, the pasuk that you tell him is like exactly that. If it's a historical event, then it's true. Like the pieces from Ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li b'seisim Mitzrayim means that you look at the Matzah and the Maror and you say, because of this, Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. Not the opposite. Not, this is because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and our bread didn't get to rise, that's why we're eating this on the table. That's what he's thinking, right? Because of that historical event, we're all here. And you're telling him, like, no, 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 no. It's the opposite. Because we would all be here, that's why that historical event took place. Because we would all be doing our Avodas Hashem every year, in and out, on Pesach. Because we're all going to be enmeshed in the Yetzias Mitzrayim, and in Torah, and in Avoda, and in trying to understand how this is all personal to us. That's why Hashem, all the way back then, took us out of Mitzrayim. So again, right, that's exactly the opposite personality of where we're looking for. Let's bookend this this specific chabura over here, right? That's the personality that we're showing up with. That's the mentality that we're showing up to in Leil HaSeder this year and really every year. Listening to the story and listening to that, you know, the gray of the story that we're all reading and what's the color beneath it for every single one of us. What does it mean to us? What does it mean to our Avodas Hashem? And how do we listen to that story and find the pieces for us that dictate that change in the Seder of our Avodas Hashem going forward on this night? So next time we will keep going. We'll keep going. I'll see if we could keep going straight or if we skip a little bit. I'll have to read it and see. But we'll keep going in Magid with that story.